You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 320.
On today's show, we talk about a 7,000-year-old underwater wall, a trumpet dating to Boudicca's time, and an almost all-female medieval cemetery.
Let's dig a little deeper into all that fantastic underwater archaeology. Welcome to the show, everyone. This brand new podcast we call The Archaeology Show.
Oh. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
It's been a minute.
It was hectic over the Christmas holidays, and yeah, it just was.
Anyway, it's 2026, brand new episode. Not a brand new show for those that are happening to listen to this for the first time.
No, we're 300 some odd episodes deep at this point. So. Some odd.
This is our 320th episode.
I know. I just don't have that up right now in front of me.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're just going to dive right into a few news articles, and then maybe in segment three, we'll do a little life update because that's a shorter set of notes. Okay. So this first article is called Archaeologists Discover Mysterious 7,000-Year-Old Stone Wall Beneath the Waves Off the Coast of France. And it's from Smithsonian Magazine.
Mm-hmm. My favorite place to get articles from.
Well, it's not popular, but we'll go with it.
But at least they're in their lane because, you know, Smithsonian is a museum, not a mechanic. So
yes. Well, there you go. All right. So this one's got some pretty cool pictures in it, too. So go ahead and take a look at the article linked in the show notes.
Yeah. And they did also link to the actual paper that they published on this called the International Journal of Nautical Archaeology. That's where it was published. So that link will also be in the show notes.
Right. All right. So this whole thing started when French geologist Yves Fouquet discovered a nearly 400-foot-long underwater linear structure off the coast of France while studying seabed charts. This is kind of like those people that go on Google Earth and try to look for pyramids and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do it with seabed charts, too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's kind of what they're doing with the Amelia Earhart stuff, too, right? Like, they're looking at pictures of the bottom of the sea and seeing what it could be, right?
So yeah. The only problem with where Amelia Earhart is, they gained all that imagery almost because of Amelia Earhart, because it's so remote.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So archaeologists have now identified this underwater structure as a stone wall that was built 7,000 years ago by hunter-gatherers, and they went over that in the Journal of Nautical Archaeology, like I said earlier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the wall is located in the Atlantic Ocean off Île de Seine, Brittany, which is basically northwestern France. Mm-hmm. So it measures about 66 feet wide at the base and averages 7 feet tall. This thing's no joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's dotted with dozens of upright slabs and stones, which we call those monoliths. And they form parallel lines, some extending nearly 6 feet above the top.
Yeah. The structure is now 30 feet underwater, but was originally on dry land between low and high tide marks. So it could be seen, you know, a couple of different points throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it was generally when the sea levels were lower at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is what I love about this kind of archaeology is, like, you have to, like, imagine where people would have been when sea levels were lower in the past. And that's what they've done here, because all of this is underwater now, right? So
yeah. And you might be thinking, well, 7,000 years ago, that seems to be well after the last ice age.
Yeah.
But the ice age end is marked by the receding of the glaciers, not the advancing of the glaciers. Mm-hmm. So it took the glaciers thousands of years to melt, you know, and truth be told, there's still glaciers that are part of that, right?
Yeah.
They just haven't melted yet. They keep getting built up and then, you know, taken down. They're not continental glaciers anymore.
Right, right.
But
yeah, it's a very slow process, obviously. And like you said, it's that point where they start melting and they stop adding. So, you know, when they start melting, like, a lot more liquid is going to get added to the sea. And that's why this would have been on shore 7,000 years ago and it's not now.
Yeah. At that time of construction, the sea level was actually about 23 feet lower, and this island that's right there was 14 times larger.
Which is so crazy, right?
So.
I love and hate that, because it's, like, really cool geology, but it's also like, oh God, lost archaeology, lost so much knowledge that we could have had, because even if it's well preserved, you almost never get as much information from underwater than if it were not underwater. You know, it just ruins certain things. It just does.
Yeah, for sure. Now, this may predate the famous Karnak alignments. You may have heard of those. Mm-hmm. These are another prehistoric stone site in Brittany, that area of France. Mm-hmm. And just for those that haven't heard of those, the Karnak alignments are thousands of stones standing in long lines in northwestern France. The purpose of the wall was uncertain, but theories include built by maritime hunter-gatherers to trap fish at low tide, served as protection against flooding from rising sea levels, mm-hmm. things like that. That refers to the existing stone alignment that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The discovery provides new insights into the organization of coastal societies, of course, and it's right in that transition period from Mesolithic to Neolithic. So that's a really interesting time frame. So it's nice to have this really strong sight and presence of this wall to, you know, help draw conclusions and mm-hmm. help understand what that transition period would have been like for the people living in this area.
Yeah, for sure. Additional man-made granite structures were also found nearby. They're all sturdy, very well built, and they suggest skilled labor and generally a large group involvement because you can't move this stuff around with just a handful of people. Mm-hmm. Some people would probably disagree with that when they talk about moving, say, the big heads at Easter Island and things like yeah. that. There are ways to do it, but in general, it probably took a number of people to get this done.
It had to have. It shows that the society was organized and that somebody was putting the effort into moving and doing these things. And you just can't mm-hmm. do that unless you have a really well-organized society with a purpose. And so that speaks to what like level of development that this group of people had reached at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
The construction implies the region supported enough resources, like fish, to sustain a pretty sizable workforce. So again, that yeah. goes to organized groups of people living in the same place together, large groups of them, and, you know, having enough food to maintain that large group of people too.
Yeah, so these structures could be sort of the origin of, there's some Britain legends about sunken cities, especially what's called the city of, I don't know, it's not Wise, it's Y-S, but it's probably like city Yis or Yees yeah. or something like that, believed to be near this island. So. Mm. It's a historical legend in mm-hmm. the area, and these structures could be the origin of that. Rising sea levels could have led to sudden abandonment, although I don't know about sudden abandonment. It's not like the yeah. sea level was rising like, oh my God,
it's
there it
like
is.
It's like a tidal wave that like rolled yeah. in one day and covered it, you know?
Right. But at some point, it would have gotten too high for them to say, put up maybe, if they were even doing this, I don't know if there's evidence of it, but maybe putting up like earthen barriers when mm-hmm. the water started to get a little closer. But if it was just something that had been around for a long time and they're like, well, I guess we'll move on
yeah.
and, you know, adjust, then mm-hmm. that's probably what they did.
Yeah. But the lasting impression left behind by this, you know, your oral traditions and things like that. And so this study is suggesting that the oral traditions may preserve the memories of significant prehistoric events, and those would be worthy of scientific consideration.
Yeah. Indeed.
So it's cool to consider that because it's something that archaeologists have not always done very well in the past, is kind of like looking at the oral traditions of the people mm-hmm. in the area, or the historical oral traditions that we have from maybe like 1,000 years ago. Yeah. So not necessarily the people living there now, but like the people from 1,000 years ago, which might reach back into the past far enough to get some kind of idea of, you know, the prehistoric events that happened before yeah. then. Possibly. It seems like a really long time to go back oral tradition wise, but you never know. We've had evidence of that in the past on articles we've talked about, so maybe.
Yeah, and there could be other artifacts and other, I don't know, things or structures or anything like that that are part of this. They would just have to get in and excavate, but underwater excavation is costly and time consuming.
It is.
I mean, partly because they're in scuba gear and you yeah. can only it's not too deep, you know, it's actually, they need lights to take photos and things like that, but you could, it's still like not pitch dark. It's mm-hmm. not that deep. I'm not sure when that actually you get so deep that you can't see you from can't just see. Natural light. Yeah. I thought it was around 40 feet or something like that. But
probably depends on
salinity,
like where you are yeah, and the, like yeah, a whole lot of factors. Right. Yeah.
But either way, you would still need lights. You would still need all those things, and you mm-hmm. can only stay under for so long, and then you got to go up, and mm-hmm. you can only do so many dives a day and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. it's really, really time consuming. But it's cool they found this, and hopefully we can get some other research later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So we're going to move on just on the other side of the water there, basically over to Britain. And there's been some cool things found about or related to Boudica, which is somebody we've talked about in the
talk
past.
To? I'd yes, love talk to talk to Boudica. Yes, that would be Boudica amazing.
When we went to England.
Put that on my bucket yep. list.
She was right there. She's like, sup, bros? So, all right. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Back on the other side. Welcome back to episode 320 of The Archaeology Show. And now we're moving on, as I said, to Britain. And this article is from The Guardian, and it's called Extraordinary Iron Age War Trumpet Find in Britain May Have Boudica Links.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like if something is of a certain time period and it's related to war at all, they relate it to Boudica. I just don't know.
That's true. I mean,
there's other signs, but
come on. I mean, she's an insanely awesome historical figure, right?
Yeah. So before we start, let's learn a little bit about Boudica. You can do that also. The Past Macabre podcast with Stephanie Rice covered this a few episodes ago. So
yeah.
Check that out.
Yeah. We'll try to put a link in the show notes to that because those were some good episodes. I think she had a double episode about Boudica not too long ago. But Boudica is such a cool figure. And I feel like it's a name that everybody's heard, but doesn't always necessarily remember exactly what she did, except like rebel against the Romans. Mm-hmm. Right. Which honestly is the most important thing to know about her. But just real quickly, she was a queen of the Iceni tribe in Roman Britain around the first century CE. And she had a run in with the Romans. Things didn't go well. They flogged her. Her daughters were abused. She was pretty mad. And she ended up leading a major rebellion against the Roman rule. And she was able to destroy a bunch of Roman towns, including Camulodunum, which is today. Stop. Camulodunum, which today is Colchester, Londinium, which is London, obviously, and Verulamium. So, you know, she did some damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Romans did eventually, like, come back at her, defeat her army, and then not too long after she was defeated, she died. And the story goes that she died likely by poison. And Stephanie goes a little bit more into this in her podcast, I believe. But we don't know exactly what happened. We can't prove it, but it seems likely that's what happened. And, you know, from that, she becomes this, like, symbol of resistance, independence, strong female warrior leader. So she's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
She's kind of amazing. So, yeah.
And I think we covered her. Or at least some finds a while back. Yeah.
So yeah, we have at some point or another. Because
go to the Archaeology Podcast Network website at archpodnet.com.
Yeah.
Or archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. And on the main page, there's a search function and you can just probably type in Boudica and find some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's such a great rabbit hole to go down because she's such a fascinating historical figure. So I love learning about her. And I think that's why people are constantly doing research and archaeological work around her or associating it with her, because, you know, with the second you can associate it with somebody with so much historical importance as somebody like a leader like Boudica, then like that just makes their research even more important too. So that's probably what's going on here a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what did they find? Well, they found an extraordinary Iron Age war trumpet known as a carnyx. And in case I'm pronouncing that wrong, Carnyx in West Norfolk. This is only the third carnyx ever found in Britain and is the most complete example discovered anywhere in the world. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's some great pictures in the article. So it's definitely worth taking a look to see those.
Yeah, this is a bronze carnyx and it's shaped like a snarling wild animal and would have been mounted on a long mouthpiece. So this is like the metal bronze part at the end and mounted onto a big mouthpiece so you can blow into it and strike fear in your enemies.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's designed to be held high above their heads and, you know, intimidate people, essentially.
Yeah. This carnyx has its large flappy ears intact, a unique feature among known finds. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm seeing here that they think it was probably a boar's head. That's hence the flappy ears and all that. So,
Nice. The hoard was found, and hoard is just a collection of artifacts. Yeah. Was found during excavations ahead of housing development. So this is basically a CRM project.
Oh, basically CRM. Yeah. We love that. Yep. Let's preserve our history while we're, you know, moving society forward.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if construction crews in England aren't like, there's a lot of construction crews in the United States that are just like, oh my God, we found something. Now it's just going to cost us more money and delay. Uh-huh. I feel like construction crews in England and elsewhere in, say, Europe are just like, when are we going to find something and stop? They just plan for it. Yeah,
probably they need to, because there's been so much occupation over time and in such a small space that, like, I feel like you do just put a shovel in the ground and find something there. Yeah. So
it's like the reverse Scotty principle from Star Trek. Usually you say, you know, something's going to take 2 years, but it's going to take 2 days. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that's a little long.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
these guys are like, oh, it's going to take 3 months. So we'll tell them six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this site was found within the territory of the Iceni tribe. So that's the first connection to possibly Boudica.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hoard was likely buried in the first century AD. Again, another connection to Boudica, because that's when the big revolt was going on in this area in this time frame. So like all of the little like you know, dominoes are falling in a row. Is that the right phrase? Dominoes? Did dominoes go into a row?
Sure. Dominoes fall.
Dominoes fall.
Yeah. I don't know if they fall into, or I mean, they fall into whatever shape you put them in. Probably.
Are we stacking them? I don't know what we're doing. It's fine.
All right. So the dominoes hit a home run and got a touchdown. So.
Oh, don't bring metaphors. Sports ball into it. Just.
Yes.
Oh, man. Okay. So we have no confirmation that the Iceni buried this hoard. How could we, right? They didn't write their name on a box that says buried by the Iceni.
Yeah, property buried, of Boudicca.
Yeah, exactly. Like that definitely does not happen.
Yeah.
But given the time frame and the place, it's possible.
Yeah. You know, people always talk about what they would do with a time machine. Mm-hmm. I think I would take societies who know how to write. They have a language. Mm-hmm. And I would, in costume, I wouldn't try to, you know, break the prime directive or anything, but mm-hmm. I'd try to teach them to just, you know, write their name or their culture or something on all their stuff. Like, just like, hey, you don't know if this guy over here, this Roman is going to steal it, but mm-hmm. if your name's on it, you can prove it was stolen.
That's true. Because
your name is on it.
That's true. Yeah.
And then that would just help us out later on.
It would be very helpful.
I feel like that wouldn't be dramatically impactful on history, although it probably would be because somebody would be like, oh my god, this was blah blah blah, and it's only 1,000 years later and it's still 1,000 years before us and world changes. So.
And you have to be practical about it and make sure you're not doing things that aren't going to last through time, like organic items that will just decompose away. So focus your efforts on metals and stones and things like
that. Well, if you want the idea to persist, you got to tell them put on everything. Yeah, because they're thinking locally right now, time-wise.
I see. Good luck. I'm really good luck with this plan.
I'm thinking temporally, and I'm like, you know.
Okay.
As Doc Brown in Back to the Future would say, you're not thinking fourth dimensionally.
I think I am, though, because I'm definitely taking time into account.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta take the lie into account, too.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, experts believe that these finds can reshape our understanding of Iron Age sound, music, and warfare. That sounds like a lot.
That is a lot.
But still.
That is a lot.
Yeah, I don't know about reshaping.
Listen, this is The Guardian. They're not people who work in museums. So, you know, we're critiquing this article as we go a little bit, for sure. They're making this bigger than I think it probably is. But
one of the cool things that's just one of those little human touches that we like to see on archaeology sites, because artifacts are cool, blah, blah, blah. You find fun stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it's cool to see the human element in something and just, you know, like fingerprints, things like that.
I know.
Well, this shows signs of repair. It's not just some beautiful artifact mm-hmm. that we found sitting in the ground like you find a lot of in England.
Yeah.
But this was used and it shows signs that it was broken and then fixed. And somebody's like, we still need this. So I'm going to sit down and mend this thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was important enough to them to fix it. So it's not a grave good, right? Because grave goods are always pristine when they go in because they make them specifically for, well, not always, but a lot of the time they're made specifically for the burial, you know? So
I feel like the repair says something too, unless it was after the repair, but you can almost tell because it's been repaired that it probably wasn't traded for well outside of here because people had the skill to fix it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe they're the ones that made it.
Yeah, that's true.
Or the craftsmen are still around or somebody else that knows how to fix it, but at least they have the skills to be able to do something like
that.
They
do. They at least work with that kind of material so that they can try to fix it if it breaks. It's not so foreign to them, you know, that they got us from somewhere that far away that they have no idea how to even fix it. Yeah.
This next statement we took from the article was, I hate these statements, but it said that such objects were likely considered powerful, possibly even imbued with life or spiritual significance. I don't know how we can even remotely make that statement 7,000 years later.
Considered powerful by who?
Well, not 7,000. I was thinking of the last article.
Oh, yeah.
But a long time later, a couple thousand years
2000?
Later.
Yeah. I mean, that's a long time ago. But like, I'm always, those statements really bug me too. Because I'm like, powerful by who?
Yeah.
And imbued with life or spiritual significance? Whose life? What spiritual? What significant? Like, that just feels so like, I don't know. I need more than that to even go down that road.
In general, I think the Celtic people were, you know, if you're using animal symbology and things like that, that it probably they did put maybe some sort of significance on it because that's there. But I just think making a statement like that is a little bit leading.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, these artifacts are currently being conserved and will be studied in more detail. And their legal status is under review, according to UK's Treasure Act.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know who gets to take possession just yet.
Yep. Ancient writers have described carnices as instruments producing a harsh, intimidating sound in battle. And the famous Gundestrup cauldron from Denmark, which is the same time period, it depicts warriors playing these similar horns. And you can see a picture of that in the article, because I don't know if you're like me, but at first I kind of didn't quite understand exactly how this thing worked and what they did with it. But you know how in like medieval movies and stuff, like there's like a kid playing a trumpet when they're riding into battle?
Yeah,
it's like this, except instead of a trumpet that goes straight out from their mouth, it went straight up.
Yeah,
like way high up. And it had that animal head on the end of it. And then it would make that loud sound out the top of it. So
like you could just see this coming from a distance, be like, what is that shrieky sound?
Yeah. And like to just see these like bobbing heads too coming at you would have been crazy. So yeah, I bet it was quite intimidating, especially if you were going against somebody who didn't have that same tradition. And so they were like, what is happening right now? Right. Why are there boar's heads screaming at me? I don't understand. So
yeah. As we mentioned at the top of the segment, previous carnyx finds are extremely rare. The only other known British example is actually in the National Museum of Scotland.
Mm, nice.
So now we had pulled this article because we had intended to actually record about a week ago. So this is now out on BBC Two, which if you have probably the BBC app and you're in the United States, then you might be able to see this. But it's a second episode of a new series called Digging for Britain. So you should be able to see it there. Yep. It said it was aired January 14th of 2026, which is now past that. So hopefully you can check that out. We need to get that BBC app. I know we don't need another streaming service, but
it might be able to do it with BritBox too. I'm not sure.
Well, that's the app I'm talking
about.
Is that
the one that you get all the British ones? Yeah. Listen, I'm trying to get streaming services out of our lives, not add more of them. So we'll see. Indeed. I'll put a big we'll see on that.
We don't really watch any TV. We just listen to episodes of the Archaeology Podcast Network over again because we've heard everything. So
yeah, I've heard literally every word spoken.
Yes.
Because I edit all the shows. So. Yes.
But that's what we do. I feel like you guys should do the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay. All right. Well, we are going to stay on the small island of the UK and
that's just where the news was. Okay.
Head over to Wales for the next article. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the third and final segment of episode 320 of the Archaeology Show. Haven't done that in a while.
Nope.
Had to do it.
You're not doing it now.
Yep. Had to do it. Anyway, so this article is from BBC.com and it's called Intriguing Finds Could Solve Mystery of Women in Medieval Cemetery. I don't think when we were looking at these articles that we even realized we had sort of a all Britain, sort of. I mean, like Britain adjacent over there in the sea near France, but, you know, an all British episode.
It like super wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
But it just turned out that way. And this article in particular was so intriguing to me because this cemetery is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like you said, this is from BBC News and archaeologists have uncovered this medieval cemetery. It's near Fonman Castle in Wales, and it dates to the 6th to 7th century.
Yep.
They found 58 skeletons so far. And here's the kicker, which was so interesting to me, why it made the list for us to talk about, is that nearly all of those skeletons in the cemetery are women. Yeah. There's a handful of men and children, and the rest are all women. Like, what? What do we have going on here? Some kind of like, you know, leave the men behind society. We don't need you anyway.
Or they just
who knows
buried the men somewhere else. We haven't found it yet.
True. That's possible.
Yeah, I mean, they're still
dead. But
there's
some men there, though.
Meaning yeah, there
they
are some.
It's not like they're not allowed to. They just weren't there to be buried.
The graves are shallow. And you got to take a look at one of the pictures here because they're cut into limestone bedrock and the skeletons are remarkably well preserved. Now, the actual first picture in the article doesn't actually look like bedrock to me. It looks like limestone boulders all jumbled around.
It looks like fill, doesn't it?
Yeah, like glacial till almost.
Yeah.
You know, like a glacier would have come out, ground up all the rocks, and then left rocks behind. And this is what it looks like. But still, I can't imagine digging in that and actually finding something and not crunching through it because, geez, it's so crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I'm looking to... Well, because, you know, sometimes these articles put in like pictures that are similar to what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm not getting that from the caption, though. It says the caption on that image is the 1500 year old skeletons are intact and well preserved. So I think that is actually from the site.
It could be. Yeah.
So maybe some of them, because they also say in the article that they're cut into limestone bedrock. So who knows?
So recent finds there include the outline of a small building at the cemetery center, possibly a shrine or chapel.
Nice.
The graves are all clustered around this structure, suggesting it was a highly desired burial spot. And some graves contain multiple individuals.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah,
all sounds pretty normal. So except for the fact that they're all women,
mm-hmm.
what do we have going on here?
Yeah, other artifacts found reveal a blend of hardship and wealth. So kind of across the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
there's an ornate copper, which is possibly bronze brooch, possibly gilded with gold and decorated with green enamel. And there's a decorated bone pin and a comb carved from antler. There's exquisite multicolored glass beads, likely used as clothing or jewelry adornments. And some of the domestic items include quern stone for grinding flour,
mm-hmm.
pottery, and glassware for eating and drinking.
So that's kind of a crazy mix of artifacts. Like you said, a blend of hardship and wealth. We've got domestic items. We've also got these things like the beads. So mm-hmm. it does sound like it's a site where people were living there, right?
Yeah.
And you have a various different people coming together from different social statuses, probably bringing stuff with them when they come. You know, that kind of like makes me think of, reminds me of, is like nuns, right?
Yeah.
Because when a nun comes in, and now this, I'm talking like older times. I don't really know what it's like to become a nun today in modern times.
A nun? Yeah. We're leaving that in.
No, we're not. I don't know what it's like to become a nun today
yeah.
in modern times, but just thinking of medieval times.
Yeah.
You would walk in and you would come there with what you came with. And I think you often had to bring things to donate to the church as well. But once you were there, you became one of the members and you didn't have all the
yeah.
accoutrements of the social status that you had before. So
right.
that could explain why you have this mix of stuff, because richer people would come and bring things with them. But then once they were there, they were just part of the group. So
that makes sense, too, because with the stone for grinding flour for bread and the mm-hmm. pottery and glass for eating and drinking. The Dr. Andy Seaman, who was there, said this is not just a place for the dead. This is a living community here as well.
Yeah.
And he thinks that the community was enclosed, living right next door to the cemetery
mm-hmm.
and separated from the rest of society, which would make it seem like some sort of nunnery or something like that.
Yeah.
So,
and we keep saying nuns, which does invoke Catholicism, but that doesn't necessarily mean that these people were
Catholics.
Related to Catholicism in any way. It could
yeah.
have just been some kind of spiritual or religious society that happened to be a focus place for women.
Yeah.
Which, again, is super interesting because you hear about nuns all the time and mm-hmm. it's pretty well documented. That is a behavior in that church that's been around for a long time. But then I start wondering, like, what other religions might have done it? Did you have a pagan tradition that was women living together that long ago? Because 1,500 years ago, that would have been, you know,
yeah.
in that sort of transitional Christian time.
Right.
So I'm very curious now what other types of female-oriented spiritual possibilities could be out there. I don't know. That'd be
yeah.
fun to do more research on that.
Seems like a pretty harsh spiritual environment, too, possibly, because, well, first off, discussing the men and some of the children, too, were they related to any of the women?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on? I'm thinking, like, I mean, you can't stop humans from being humans.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes men were probably where they shouldn't be. And I don't know, maybe they were buried together because who knows, right? Right. And women have children. So maybe they joined this religious sect pregnant.
That's
or something
true.
Like that. And something happened and they died together. Because I have a hard time believing that they dug the grave up and didn't alter the current occupant to bury somebody else there. I feel like we'd see signs of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how closely they were buried to each other or if they died at the same time and were buried
together. Oh, like because there was 2, 3, 4 people in some of
in
the
some
graves
cases.
Together.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, but there's a lot of reasons why people could have been buried in a grave together
sure.
at the same time. I mean,
yeah.
it might have just been an illness went through
yeah, yeah.
and a bunch of people died together or an attack. I
yeah.
mean, this is a rough time 1,500 years ago, so it could be that.
Well,
yeah,
a,
who knows?
Along those lines, while most of the people were buried with great care, 2 women were tossed in a ditch, one with her hands and feet tied.
Mm.
And like, what happened there? Yeah.
I mean,
a witch.
Again, if it's like a... If it's a closed society where they all live together, they probably had their ways of punishing people, too, who did things they weren't supposed to. So
those women clearly weighed more than a duck.
Oh, my God. She's a witch. No, very interesting. And I think it sounds like this is sort of at the beginnings of the excavation. They're really just like cataloging artifacts and saying what they have.
Yeah.
The really interesting information is going to come when they start analyzing the bones and figuring out if there's a DNA connection between these people. Maybe there's more of a familial connection
mm-hmm.
than it seemed like at first. And that would be weird to have an all-female society, but I guess
yeah.
it's possible. Maybe the men went off out of the group, but no, there would still be men there. So
yeah.
no, that doesn't make sense. So I don't know. But anyway, that's the interesting stuff that's going to come with more research down the road for sure.
They did say that this could be an example of very early Christianity. They're trying to work that out, mm-hmm. finding other artifacts.
Yeah.
But this being the 6th or 7th century, I mean, they basically just wrote the Bible, I think, a few hundred years before that.
Very early. Yeah. Yeah.
And they pretty much, I mean, let's not get into it. It's historically known. They pretty much made up everything in there because it was well after the events that are supposed to take place in the Bible and, you know, how historical references go. But
yeah.
Anyway, so that information for people, you know, trying to be part of this religion probably hadn't quite reached everybody yet. You know, so trying to figure out, you know, they knew about it, but trying to figure out how to actually do things all the right way. They probably didn't know. So
no, I think there's a lot of variation in early Christianity because of that exact reason, because people were doing things slightly different and there wasn't as much cohesiveness about what that religion meant, what it was doing, and how to make sure everybody was doing it together. That came later with a larger population, more people a part of the religion and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, that is the end of the show. Just a quick little update on us. We are back in Mexico.
Back in Mexico.
Yeah. A year ago, probably in a month or so, we did an episode about tacos.
Really
about Mexico, but we started with tacos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was pretty fun because we did it live on the beach here with all our friends. And so we're back in the same place that we've come the last few years. And we were actually back here in October. I don't remember if we recorded an episode.
Probably talked about it when we were here because we were here for almost a month. But
then
we left, went to North Carolina to see my family for the holidays. And that was great, but it's a very busy time when we're there, which is why we fell off on our recording schedule a little bit. Yeah. We had holiday stuff. We had family stuff. It was just like a whole thing.
Yeah.
But we're back now in Mexico, just living our best lives on the beach. And hopefully should be back on a more consistent recording schedule. That's the goal anyway. So
indeed,
if anybody has stuff they want to hear, has seen some news articles they want us to talk about, please feel free to send them in because we are definitely going to be recording episodes and sharing them weekly. So more content is always welcome.
That is right. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Hopefully we'll be back next week as we get back on track.
I'm not saying hopefully. We will. We definitely will. We're doing it.
Yeah.
We all love talking about this kind of stuff. There's so much great news out there.
I was just reading some really good articles this morning too that I want to talk about. Yeah.
Awesome.
So. All right. Well, we will see you next time then.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at arcpodnet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.arcpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.